स्व तत्सवितुर्वरेण्यं भर्गो देवस्य धीमहि धियो यो न प्रचोदयात्। मे वी मेडिटेट ऑन दैट सुप्रीम बीइंग हु ड्वेल्स इन द हार्ट्स ऑफ ऑल। He is the source and sustenance of this universe. In Him we live, move and have our being. May He illumine our hearts and may He guide us in every way. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Peace, peace. We have been studying the Viveka Chudamuni, or Crest Jewel of Discrimination, by the great seer philosopher Shankara. Now, this particular chapter seems to be a little dull, but it's very important. And so, I shall try to recapitulate what we have already studied in this particular chapter. Here it deals with what is known as Maya. You have heard the word Maya. And Maya is associated with Brahman. Generally, in the West particularly, the word Maya has been translated as illusion, but it is not an illusion. Maya is neither this nor that. neither an illusion nor an absolute reality. Maya has a reality, has an existence, as long as we are experiencing it in the relative universe. In other words, it has a relative existence. When we transcend this relativity, then we transcend Maya. Now, Maya is the power of Brahman, associated with Brahman. And when we see or experience Him as associated with Brahman, that we call, what you may say, the personal God. Now, for instance, in Christianity, and Mohammedanism, and almost every religion except Buddhism and Vedanta in its non-dualistic aspect, only believes in a personal being, in a personal God. They do not have any even conception of an impersonal being. God is considered as a creator. He is the creator of this universe. That is how, in almost every religion, this has been considered as God, creator. In Vedanta, it points out that when we consider Him as creator, as preserver, as dissolver, He is known as personal God. You see, here again is the point. Maya is the power associated with Brahman. This power is the substance that, the power contains the substance that is the material of this universe. I'll come to that. Generally, there is this idea that God created this universe out of nothing, which is not possible. How can something come out of nothing? It's not possible. And this Maya is the substance. And what is that substance? There are three substances compose this Maya. You know, these three gunas we call, no English equivalent to that. But these are the three substances, sattva, rajas and tamas. And when they are in perfect equilibrium, still associated with Brahman, there is no creation. When this balance is disturbed, there is this creation of this universe. So, Brahman as a personal being that is associated with Maya is the creator and preserver. He preserves this universe. And in him again it dissolves. This whole universe dissolves. You see, according to this theory, this creation is going on from beginningless time to endless time. There is no beginning to this creation. But beginning to the cycle of a creation, to the beginning of a cycle. And cycle means that it alternates between the phases of potentiality and expression. At times, this whole universe is drawn back by him unto himself. And then again out of himself, he projects this whole universe. Now this Maya is composed of these three gunas, sattva, rajas and tamas. When the balance is disturbed, that is when there is a rajas more than the other aspects, then there is this projection. Now this is with regard to Brahman as a personal being. Now again, what is man, an individual man? Man also is Brahman, Atman, the self within. Atman is Brahman, no difference. And the same Atman or same Brahman dwells in every being. Now this Atman again is associated with Maya. You see, this Maya creates this whole universe of body and mind, matter and mind, mind and matter. This whole universe of mind and matter is the projection of this Maya. Now, we have body, mind, senses and all these, you know. So, Atman associated or identified with all this is known as the individual man. Now, the individual man can never be what we call personal God. Personal God, there is this difference. Personal God has the whole universal Maya power and it is under his control. You and I are associated with a part of that Maya. And we are controlled by that Maya. You see, if you take, for instance, ordinary analysis, if you analyze, you see, this body, this mind, the senses, sense organs, these are all made up of Maya, that is, made up of the three gunas. And the Atman has nothing to do with them. But Atman has become identified with them, associated with them, and that gives this sense of individuality. I am an individual being. And how, therefore, I am controlled by this Maya? My body aches, I feel it. My mind is under moods, and I associate myself, identify myself with those moods. You see? But God, Brahman, is not attached. He keeps Maya under his control. And we are controlled by Maya. Now what is the ideal, the goal? Is to transcend this Maya, transcend these gunas. The moment you detach yourself, and of course which is possible in the transcendental consciousness. When you detach yourself from these gunas, the Atman is Brahman. No Maya there. And so you see, Maya exists only as long as we remain subject to this Maya. The Maya disappears when we detach ourselves from this Maya. This whole universe of mind and matter disappear. Then what remains? Brahman. Brahman alone. So, again, you see how these gunas, again, tamas, that hides the reality. Rajas creates desires, cravings in us. And tamas, again, sattva, reveals it. To go beyond the three gunas, we have to control the tamas by rajas and rajas by sattva, and then we transcend. From sattva, we get a glimpse of the reality. When you meditate, for instance, and your mind is calm and tranquil, there's no passion, no desire, no craving, but quiet, tranquil, devoted to God, devoted to Brahman, then you are under the influence of sattva. But that also, you have to transcend. Transcend in this sense. There will be the play of the gunas, but you are not attached to them. That, of course, only when you have reached, when you have transcended the gunas and reached samadhi and attained that Brahman, knowledge of Brahman, then as you come back, you are no longer attached to the gunas. There is a play of the gunas in you. You see, an illumined soul. You see him. There is rajas in him, tamas in him, and sattva in him, though sattva is very predominant. But there is a play of rajas and tamas also. For instance, when Christ threw out that money changers from the temple, he had to express rajas. When he had to preach, he had to express rajas. And then again, when you go to meditate and be absorbed, he was sattva. But he was not under the influence of any of these gunas. But until we transcend the gunas and reach that knowledge of Brahman or knowledge of Atman, we remain subject to these gunas and we have to become established in sattva. And so, let me read out to you now. A man may be intelligent, clever and learned. He may have the faculty of keen self-analysis, but if he is overpowered by tamas, he cannot understand the true nature of the Atman, even though it may clearly be explained to him in various ways. He takes the appearance which is the product of his ignorance for the reality, and so he becomes attached to delusions. This obscuring power of dreadful tamas is, alas, very great, and that's universal. Failure to perceive the actual object. You see, what is the actual object? Brahman. And we fail to perceive that actual object, and that because of the tamas in us. You see, we may be highly intellectual, analytical, everything, but still the reality is not revealed to us. Because there is that subject to tamas. We take this objective universe, what we sense and perceive and experience with our senses, as something very real. And what makes us see that something as real, this universe as real? Tamas, that hides the reality. Failure to perceive the actual object, seeing something as different from what it really is, vacillation of the mind, taking delusions for realities, these are the characteristics of tamas. As long as a man is attached to tamas, he never gets free from them, and rajas also will trouble him without ceasing. Tamas has these further characteristics: ignorance, laziness, dullness, sleep, delusion, and stupidity. A man who is under their influence cannot understand anything. He lives like a somnambulist or an unconscious love of food, you know, in whom the tamas is most predominant, dull, stupid. Sattva is purity. Even when it is mixed with rajas and tamas, because always, you know, pure sattva is very high. It's always mixed up with something. Rajas or tamas. But even then, this sattva is great. Sattva is purity. Even when it is mixed with rajas and tamas, as water mixed with water, it lights the way to liberation. You see, that this desire that you have to find God, that is sattva. That leads you to liberation. That gives you the desire to follow the path of liberation. Sattva reveals the Atman as the sun reveals the objective world. Not exactly, but you are towards that. Sattva, when mixed with the other gunas, has these characteristics. You see, if sattva is predominant in any individual, and there may be mixed with rajas and tamas, but here are the characteristics of a man who has the predominance of sattva. In other words, a man who is really ready for that illumined knowledge of God. Now, these are the characteristics. Absence of pride, purity, contentment, austerity, a desire to study the scriptures, self-surrender to God, harmlessness, truthfulness, continence, freedom from greed, faith, devotion, longing for liberation, aversion to the things of the world, and the other virtues that lead toward God. In other words, sattva is the characteristic, is the predominant characteristic which expresses in every one of us as longing for God, struggling to practice the spiritual disciplines. Sattva in its pure state has the following characteristics: tranquility, direct perception of the Atman, absolute peace, contentment, joy, and steady devotion to the Atman. Through these, the seeker tastes everlasting bliss. Maya has been defined as a composition of these three gunas. It is a causal body of the Atman. That is, when it is in a dormant state. Dreamless sleep, that is, in the dreamless sleep. It is the causal body of the Atman. Dreamless sleep belongs preeminently to the causal body. In this state, the workings of the mind and sense organs are suspended. In dreamless sleep, there is no cognition of any kind. You know, they have studied very deeply into these three states of consciousness, waking, dreaming, and dreamless sleep. And then they ask us to go beyond these three states to realize the Atman. Within these three states, we are identifying ourselves with the bodies, with the sheaths. For instance, when we are awake, we identify ourselves with the body, physical body, mind, senses, sense organs, ego, all that. And when we are dreaming, then we are not identifying ourselves with the physical body, but our mind is active there, subtle body is active. And when we are in dreamless sleep, the causal body is there. So, in a sense, we are nearer to the Atman in deep sleep. When you are completely unconscious, for instance, when through this drug they make you unconscious, completely unconscious. No, you have sometimes certain experiences. You are nearer to the Atman, nearer to God, as it were. But of course, that's not the real thing. you are still under the subjection of ignorance. Causal body means the cause of all ignorance is there. But the mind continues to exist in a subtle form like a seed. The proof of this can be found in everybody's experience that the mind, when we wake up, still remembers, I knew nothing. There are the body, the sense organs, the vital force, the mind, the ego, and all their functions, the objects of enjoyment, pleasures, and all other kinds of experience, the gross and the subtle elements, in short, the whole objective universe, and Maya, which is its cause. None of these is the Atman. You see, the whole objective universe. And when we consider the mind, for instance, that also an object of experience. Mind is not the subject. Subject is the Atman. And mind is something that you see, you experience, you can read your own thoughts. How is it possible? You know, very interesting. Amongst the Western philosophers, I think Comte, he was known as a positivist. He brought out this question, this enquiry. How can the mind, the subject, can know its own thoughts, can read its own thoughts? How is it possible? The eyes cannot see themselves. And the mind is the perceiver, is the thinker. And how can the thinker know its own thoughts? And that question remains unanswered in Western philosophy and Western psychology. And the Indian psychology points out this Atman separate from the mind. And that's why it is possible to read the thoughts of your own mind. There are the body, the sense organs, the vital force, the mind, the ego, and all their functions, the objects of enjoyment, pleasures and all other kinds of experience, the gross and the subtle elements. In short, you see, this mind also is included there. In short, the whole objective universe and Maya, which is its cause, none of these is the Atman. You must know that Maya and all its effects, from the cosmic intellect down to the gross body, are other than the Atman. All are unreal, like a mirage in the desert. Of course, they become unreal when you experience the Atman. Then he says, this is a new chapter. Now I shall tell you the nature of the Atman. If you realize it, you'll be freed from the bonds of ignorance and attain liberation. What is bondage? Bondage is the ignorance about the Atman, ignorance of what you are, ignorance of Brahman, ignorance of God. And what is knowledge? Knowledge is the knowledge of the Atman, knowledge of God. You remember, if you read the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna, this M, when he first comes to visit Sri Ramakrishna, he asks him, when he learned that he was married, he asked him, how is your wife? He said, she's good, but she's ignorant. Because she was not learned in books, you know. And so the same said, she's a good woman, but she's ignorant. And then Sri Ramakrishna said to him, and you are wise, are you? You see, then he made this remark that he did not know what knowledge means. To him, knowledge meant learning in books. But knowledge, in its true sense, only means knowledge of God, wisdom of God. Of course, we make this difference. Knowledge we call relative, wisdom we use it in that absolute sense, wisdom of God. And when we have this knowledge, that means that we are freed from the maya and ignorance. We are released from this. You see, all troubles, all worries, all ignorance are caused by this identification of the Atman with the body, senses, mind, etc. For instance, we are afraid of death. Where is death? It's death to the body. And why am I afraid of death? Because I identify myself with the body. Or any mood or thought arises in the mind, I identify myself with that. But the Atman, as you will find, he brings this out. And the Atman's nature is pure bliss. Always in bliss. And that Atman, that's you. Within yourself, the real you, always in bliss. And always all-knowing. Knowledge, infinite knowledge is there. And that is neither born nor does it die. That is always immortal. Immortal bliss. Pure consciousness. That's Atman. And it has never lost its nature. You have never lost your nature. You are always one with God, one with Brahman. But because associating with this little self, and this ego is the identification of the Atman with the seeds, creates the ego. It is no reality. There is a self-existent reality which is the basis of our consciousness of ego. Of course, that's the basis. You see, your mind would not be active and thinking without that pure consciousness of the Atman reflected upon it. That reality is witness of the three states of our consciousness and is distinct from the five bodily coverings. The five bodily coverings are, you see, this physical body, which is called annamaya, made up of food. Then pranamaya, you see, that gives us the breath and breathing and different functions of breath. You see, breathing simply does not mean breathing in and breathing out. There are other functions. There is one function of the prana, breath is to digest the food. And then there are other functions, five functions to the prana. And then mind, sheath of the mind, and sheath of the intellect, and the sheath of ego. These are the five sheaths covering the Atman. And as long as there is the identification with any of these, it's in deep sleep also, there's still the identification with the covering of causal body. Sheath of ego. And in samadhi, no more is there any identification. So that is what the difference between deep sleep and samadhi. It's in deep sleep, you are nearer to Brahman, but you are not conscious of it. And in samadhi, there is the awareness, you are not unconscious. There is the awareness of the Atman, awareness of that bliss. Then of course, here again Shankara will point out later how there is the awareness of that bliss in the lower aspect, in the lower state. In the highest state again, you are not, there is no you to be aware. It is bliss itself. Of course, you know, We can't explain that, because I don't know what it's all about when we come to that. But this much I can tell you, what I heard from my master. You see, ordinarily we would say that, anybody would say that I'd love to taste the sugar. I don't want to be sugar. You see, it's good to taste the sugar, to taste the honey. But if you're honey, somebody else would taste you, you see. That is our idea. And so that illustration is given. And I happened to be present, and somebody told my master that there is this song, I want to taste sugar, I don't want to be sugar. And then Maharaj replied, very true, until you begin to taste sugar. You say that. But when you begin to taste sugar, then you want to be sugar. Of course, I know, I can't say that I understand this at all. Well, let me stop here. May I invite questions?
The oral questions from the audience are being revoiced due to their being off mic during the original recording.
Yes?
The seat of tamas is dullness and ignorance, and sattva is purity, calmness, and freedom.
That's right.
So is rajas a negative force?
No, rajas is not a negative force. Rajas is very active, positive force that makes you do things, good or bad.
Both.
Uh-huh.
What do the pranas have to do with it?
Prana is a sheath, the life force. And you see, we are identifying with the prana. It's one of the sheaths, just as physical sheath.
Is it the subtle sheath? Is it the subtle sheath?
Yes, well, you see, pranamaya, prana, mano, and vijnana, these three combined, we call the subtle sheath. Then there are three sheaths. Physical, subtle, and causal. But in the Upanishads, we find mention of five sheaths. And Shankara refers to the five sheaths. And so when you say five sheaths, then there's the physical sheath, then pranamaya, that which is the life force, then manomaya, that is the manas, mind, vijnanamaya, intellect, and anandamaya, you see, it's called blissful body, that is the causal body, because it is nearer to the Atman, nearmost to the Atman.
Would you say that for a man in samadhi, the gunas are in balance?
He's detached from the gunas, completely detached. Sattva is predominant, not balanced. Sattva is predominant, and through sattva, he goes, transcends sattva also. In the last chapter of the Gita, you will find how it states the nature of the illumined soul who has transcended the gunas. And this is what it says, that he has the play of the gunas in him, that is after he comes back from samadhi. He has the play of the gunas, but is detached from them. He is just like an observer, objectively seeing how the mind is working or the body is working, but he is detached.
Is it the divine play then?
It is a sort of divine play, yes, you may say that. See, I give you one illustration, for instance. I'll give you the illustration of Sri Ramakrishna's life first. See, he was suffering from that physical ailment, cancer. And he would say, oh, how painful, how painful. And then one of the disciples, Swami Turiyananda, he comes to visit him, and Sri Ramakrishna says, oh, I've suffered so much, there's so much pain. And then this disciple says, I don't see that you are suffering. I see you are in a blissful ocean. And then he said, oh, you fellow got my number. You see, in a slang way he expressed that. And now I know this instance in the case of Maharaj. He was suffering from typhoid fever. And there was a disciple who was taking care of him. And of course he was suffering. And this disciple one time thought, oh, he is a man of God, they say, and why is there this suffering? And he had some doubt about him, you know. And then suddenly he woke up and said, look here, I can detach myself from this body and I would not suffer anything at all. But I'm doing this, I'm suffering this for your good, so that you can serve me. You see? Same way with Swamiji or these disciples of Thakur. They could detach themselves at will from their body and mind and everything. You see, you know that incident of Swami Turiyananda. His carbuncle in the back was operated while he was just talking to the disciples, talking to devotees. And the doctor went on operating. And he was detached from his body completely. And then again, this was very interesting. The same Swami, you know, this same doctor thought, you know, the Swami had a little sore on his toe. And he just didn't want, you know, any operation or anything. But this surgeon, you know, he thought that he is detached from the body, so he would not suffer at all. And so as he went prostrate and he took some knife with him, and he suddenly operated. And Swami startled. And then this Swami said, but why didn't you tell me? Because I have to get ready to detach myself. Otherwise, how can I live and move and act like any other being? I have to keep my mind, keep attachment in the body too. But I can detach at will. And so you see, he suffered then. When Jesus was in the cross, you know, suddenly, you know, he said, Father, hast thou forsaken me? You see, he suffered. And then he detached himself. And then he said, it is finished.
Where is the mind in that state?
Mind, just as you have a mind, I have a mind, and same way he has a mind, but the mind is pure mind, purified mind, that's all. In that mind, no selfish desire or craving arises. Purified mind.
When I say my morning prayers, I say, tasting his nectar in every step, bathing in his name, that bath for weary souls. Why should my soul be so weary?
Well, soul there, it means mind, you know, in the English sense.
Oh.
Yeah. Not the self, with capital S. Om Hari Om. Om Sahana Bhavato Sahana Bhunaktu Sahavirjam Karavavahai Tejasvi Navadhitamastu Ma Vidvishavahai. Om. May Brahman protect us. May He guide us. May He give us strength and right understanding. May we have love for all. May our study bring light unto us. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Peace, peace, peace.